Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q3 FY18 earnings conference call of Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero on your touch-tone telephone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Jason D'Souza. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Inba. Good morning and welcome to Glenmark's Q3 earnings call. I would first like to introduce the members of Glenmark management. We have with us Glenn Saldanha, Chairman and Managing Director of Glenmark Pharmaceuticals. We have with us Robert Mattson, President, North America and API Business. And we have with us V.S. Mani, Chief Financial Officer and President, Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited. Before we begin the call and open the call for questions and answers, I would like Bob Mattson to give the opening remarks regarding the U.S. business. Over to you, Bob.
Okay. Thank you, Jason. And thanks, everyone, for joining us today. The North American finished dosage form business, which includes Canada and the U.S., closed the third quarter with recorded revenues of $113.7 million versus last year's corresponding quarter, which was $183.27 million, a decrease of 40.21%. Sales from last year's corresponding quarter reflect the launch of ezetimibe, generic version of Zetia, which had exclusivity in the United States in December 2016. On the approval side, the U.S. was granted four approvals in Q3. They were as follows: the NEPTUNO capsules, Haley 24FE, which is norepinephrine acetate and ethanol estradiol, and Ferrous Fumarate, 1 mg/20 µg, Haley FE1/20, norepinephrine acetate and ethanol estradiol, tablets USP, 1 mg/20 µg, and Ferrous Fumarate, norepinephrine acetate and ethanol estradiol tablets USP and Ferrous Fumarate tablets, 1 mg/20 µg, and that's the generic equivalent to minestrone, 24FE. Glenmark continues to gain market share on both new and existing products, building new business for both new and current products. In total, we have 20 ANDAs approved year to date, with two Canadian approvals and 12 U.S. approvals in the last two quarters. Three of the U.S. approvals are tentative approvals. The company also filed four ANDA applications with the U.S. FDA this past quarter and plans to file an additional eight to 10 applications in the forthcoming quarter. Glenmark's marketing portfolio consists currently of 130 generic products authorized for distribution in the U.S. market. The company currently has 58 applications pending in various stages of the approval process with the U.S. FDA, of which 26 are Paragraph IV applications. From a market perspective, we want to make note of several things. First, price erosion continued to be a challenge for the business. As most of us are aware, this was primarily due to ongoing consolidation of purchasers, and as an industry, this will continue to be a challenging environment, and we should expect it to remain that way for at least the next five quarters until we launch GSP301 Ryaltris. We plan on filing our application for Ryaltris within the next 3 months. Despite ongoing price erosion in our business, as well as those of many of our other generic manufacturers, we continue to see more initiatives to regulate pricing and/or implement pricing transparency. Other recently implemented regulations continue to negatively impact generic drug manufacturers. At Glenmark, we believe that generic drug manufacturers already are and will continue to be important players and stakeholders in addressing and solving drug pricing problems in the U.S. It's also important to note that while challenging, these market conditions are universal for companies operating in the U.S. generic pharmaceutical space. For this reason, we are optimistic regarding our strategy to pursue growth through diversification of our business segments, including complex generics, specialty branded products, and innovative products to create growth and value for the company. The global API business had a strong quarter. Revenue from the sale of API in regulated and semi-regulated markets was $35.83 million for the third quarter ending December 31st, 2017, against $28.5 $4 million for the previous quarter, recording an increase of 20.62%. During the third quarter, Glenmark filed three U.S. DMFs and one EU CDP DMF and completed several other regulatory filings in key markets. Major products that contributed to the sales growth include adapalene, amiodarone, etoricoxib, lercanapine, and perindopril. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Jason.
Thanks, Bob. Just continuing on the business operations, first we start with India. Our sales from the formulation business in India for the third quarter was at $5,785 million, recording growth of 11.92%. As per IMS December 2017, Glenmark is ranked 13th with market share of 2.28% and is the second fastest growing company as per IMS MAT 2017, December 2017. The India business continued to strengthen itself across the various therapeutic areas, which is the cardiac segment, the respiratory segment, and the derma segment. During the quarter, Glenmark launched Apivelast, an advanced oral and safe treatment for psoriasis in India. Glenmark was the first company to receive DCGI approval and marketing authorization for Apivelast in India. The company is among the leading players in the field of dermatology, and the launch of Apivelast reinforces Glenmark's commitment to bringing advanced therapies to Indian patients. Glenmark forayed into the OTC space a few years back. In a short period of time, the company has built a sizable OTC business driven by its three major brands operating in the consumer space: Candid, V-Wash, and Scan Plus. Through the introduction of its brand, V-Wash Plus, Glenmark has successfully created the female intimate hygiene category in India. Further, Candid Dusting Powder, a 30-year-old flagship brand for the company, has been a prescription leader for the treatment of antifungal skin infection and is now a leading product even in the OTC business. According to IMS data, Candid Powder has jumped 2.3 times in sales within 3 years post the OTC promotion. All the three brands have a dominant market share in each of its operating markets as per IMS-ORG data consistently for the last couple of years. The Africa, Asia, and CIS region. This region performed well in the quarter, recording growth of 28.29% at $321.30 million. In the third quarter of the financial year, Glenmark Russia recorded strong secondary sales growth as compared to the market growth, which was at 7.1%. The subsidiary ranked 41 as per MAT November 2017 in the retail segment. Glenmark Russia is also among the top 10 derma companies presently in the Russian market. Glenmark continues to secure a strong position in the expectorant market and is ranked 4th as per MAT November 2017. During the quarter, in the other CIS region, Glenmark also launched one new product in Ukraine and Uzbekistan. During the third quarter, the Asia region recorded strong secondary sales growth, with most subsidiaries performing well in the third quarter. The Glenmark Africa region also posted strong secondary sales growth, aided by good performance by the subsidiaries of South Africa and Kenya. Europe formulations. Glenmark's Europe operations continue to perform well, recording growth of 14.84% at $2247.52 million. The European subsidiary performed well during the quarter. The Western European recorded good growth during the quarter, driven by a strong performance by the German subsidiary. The Central Eastern European region recorded secondary sales growth of 26% during the quarter. During the quarter, Glenmark successfully closed the decentralized registration procedure for generic Seretide Acuhaler in the Nordic region, including Sweden, Denmark, Norway, Finland, and Iceland. This will be Glenmark's first inhaled respiratory product approval in Europe and reinforces Glenmark's commitment in the respiratory area. The commercialization of the product would depend on national approvals as well as substitution and pricing approvals. This continues to emphasize Glenmark's focus in this complex product segment and in Europe. Latin America. Glenmark's revenue from Latin America decreased by 5.15% at $898.38 million. The performance of the Latin American subsidiary was impacted due to the weak performance of the Brazilian subsidiary. However, the Mexico subsidiary continued to perform well during the third quarter. R&D. The company has a pipeline of 9 core assets, which include 4 NCEs, 4 new biological entities, and 1 biosimilar candidate in various stages of clinical development, focused in the therapeutic areas of oncology, respiratory, and dermatology. First, an R&D update on the oncology assets. GBR-1302, which is in phase 1, first in human study to determine MPD in patients with HER2-positive cancers, is actively enrolling. dose escalation continues with clinical sites open in Europe and US, and several additional sites were opened in January 2018. The study is currently dosing patients in cohort 8 and up to 10 cohorts are planned. In addition, Glenmark announced in January 24 the GBR1302 interim biomarker data, which was presented at ASCO SIBC Immuno-Oncology Symposium. GBR1342, a phase 1 first-in-human study to determine MPD in patients with multiple myeloma, dosed its first patient in December 2017. The study is currently in cohort 2, and clinical sites continue to identify patients for possible enrollment into the study. Up to 10 cohorts are planned for this MPD study. The study's primary objective is to assess safety and tolerability of increasing doses of GBR1342. Additional study objectives include awareness of assessment of biomarkers, immunogenicity, and measures of anti-tumor activity. For GBR1372, Glenmark plans to file a phase 1 first-in-human study by Q4 FY2019. Dermatology asset GBR830. A phase 2B study of GBR830 in atopic dermatitis is set to begin in Q1 FY2019 in centers across US and Europe. Glenmark will present phase 2A data on GBR830 in atopic dermatitis at the annual meeting of the American Academy of Dermatology taking place in February 2018. Respiratory assets, as Bob just mentioned, Glenmark expects to file its first NDA for the treatment of patients with seasonal allergic rhinitis in the first half of CY2018. GSP304, Glenmark has completed a phase 2 trial on GSP304 and is planning to consult with the FDA prior to initiating further clinical trials in FY2019. GBR310, the biosimilar candidate for omalizumab intended for the treatment of asthma and chronic idiopathic urticaria. The phase 1 study enrollment has been completed in February 2018 and 168 patients randomized and dosed. Top-line results are expected in July 2018. GRC398815 has completed preclinical studies. It is an inhibitor of the ROR gamma T receptor. Prior to filing initiation of phase 1, Glenmark is conducting translational studies to further validate the molecule as a treatment of COPD. And the final asset, which is GRC27864, Glenmark recently announced in January the initiation of phase 2B dose-finding study in patients with moderate osteoarthritic pain. The phase 2 study will take place in India and enroll 624 patients with osteoarthritis of the knee and hip to evaluate the safety, efficacy, and biomarkers associated with GRC27864 compared to existing NSAID and selective COX-2 inhibitors. GRC27864 is a candidate for out-licensing. Before we open the call for questions and answers, some notes that I would like to read out. The gross debt for the company was 4638 crores. The cash for the company was 1035 crores as on December 31st, 2017. The net debt was at 3603 crores as of December 31st, 2017. This is as compared to 3667 crores in March 31st, 2017. The forex loss for the third quarter was at 48 crores. As there was 26 crores of forex gain in other income arising from the previous two quarters, that forex gain was first neutralized and the balance 22 crores of forex loss is present in other expenditure. Thus, if one realizes the other income is negative for the quarter. In terms of working capital, inventories was at 2059 crores, debtors was at 2510 crores, payables is at 1903 crores. The fixed asset addition during the quarter is 175 crores. Intangible addition is 62 crores, including 10 crores of software. The R&D for the third quarter was at 280 crores, which is about 12.7% of sales for the quarter, and 802 crores, which is about 11.8% sales for the 9-month period. With this, we would like to open the floor for questions and answers. Over to you.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Our first question is from the line of Neha Manpuria from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much. First, on the, your commentary on the U.S. environment, you know, you mentioned that the you expect pricing erosion to be challenging at least for the next 5 quarters. Are you seeing any signs of, you know, further deterioration or improvement that can come through in, on the pricing erosion side? Because a lot of our peers have indicated tapering off or stabilization of pricing. So just wanted to get your views on that.
Yeah, I think the pricing erosions has remained pretty constant for us. As we move forward and we head out of the RFP cycle, we might see a little bit of improvement, but, you know, we're expecting it to remain in the same area for the next, you know, 5 quarters or so.
That would be in the high single digit, double digit, or?
Yeah, that would be around 13% in core business.
And just on the gross margins, you know, gross margins deteriorated significantly, you know, on a quarter-on-quarter basis, despite an improvement in U.S. I understand that, you know, India was very lumpy in the September quarter, but is there any, I mean, how should we look at gross margins? Is this the new base for our margins?
So, hi, this is Mani here. So, I think we should look at the gross margin as it was in the Q2 levels, because as you can obviously see in the Q3, one was obviously the erosion in the US, but more importantly, India was in the second quarter as a percentage of total sale was about almost 32-33%. This time has come off to 26. So, that's a high GC kind of business. So, I think going forward, we look at Q2 like 33-33.5% being the GC, you know, being the basically the material cost and the GC margin being higher, yeah.
Okay, because I thought the second quarter lumpiness in the India business was because of GST, restocking. So that's not a normalized run rate for the India business that we would see.
No, as we see the quarters going forward, we obviously have done some investments and I feel that even in the current quarter, I mean, of course, business have little bit cycles here and there, but if you look at the current quarter, we still have done well in India business. It's about 11.5% growth, and when you look at the pre-era of GST, you actually add back about 2.6%. So all in all, India business has done well, but I think we'll see better sales in the next quarters, but more importantly, we see the GC margins getting restored back to about 33.8%.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Prakash Agarwal from Access Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Just trying to understand this R&D investment better. So what percentage of the R&D is currently getting deployed on the specialty side, which is both the complex generics as well as the NC initiatives?
So Prakash, right now it's running at about 8% of the total revenues are going towards specialty and innovation. And obviously, if you add that back, right, you know, the core business is extremely profitable and continues to generate significant cash, right? I mean, the reality is, as a company, we are, you know, we are investing in the specialty and innovation piece, right? Because we think that's where the future lies. And it's running at about 8% of total revenues.
And in the last R&D day, we had given some, you know, broad color on our investments towards, you know, Abraxane, Suboxone, Novaraine.
Yeah.
So what kind of, you know, development stage they are into? And we talked about filing around late CY18, early CY19.
Yeah.
Are we on track with that? And also some comment on Velcol and Renagel, please.
Yeah, so... In FY19, we will file, we anticipate filing Novaraine, Concerta, and our first respiratory product, which is GSP-103, which is actually Flovent. So these are the three we think we'll file in FY19. As far as Velcol and Renvela, you know, again, it's extremely hard to predict. It's been so many years since we're waiting for these approvals. and we really have no visibility on when we will get these approvals from the agency.
Okay. And lastly, on the, you know, the other specialty, especially the respiratory pipeline 301, so you talk about filing by next quarter. How should we think about monetizing? I mean, and same with Xolair. So we are tying up or we are going on our own? And which year do we expect the approval?
So on 301, we are filing this product in the next 2 or 3 months. And our the current situation is, if you see outside the U.S., right, I mean, we are currently in several discussions to partner 301 out for some of the markets, particularly markets like Australia, Japan, China, and various markets. So it's a very exciting product, even ex-U.S. As far as the U.S. goes, clearly we are still working out our launch strategy. So we can't give too much visibility other than the fact that we are anticipating a launch in Q1 of FY20. And I think over and above that, we continue to have discussions even for the U.S. with partners for the OTC component of GSP301. So that's the current situation on GSP301. As far as the Xolair biosimilar goes, I mean, we anticipate we will start phase three if, assuming the phase one is positive, and phase one we'll report top line in around July time frame. Assuming that is positive, we anticipate going to the FDA for an end of phase two / start of phase three meeting, and hoping to start phase three in Q4 of FY19.
Okay, that is some time away.
That's FY19 next year, Q4 of next year, phase three.
Okay, and lastly, do you anticipate this R&D expense, moving up in absolute terms or in percentage to sales terms, if you could give some color, given that, all your advanced pipelines are advancing in advanced stage?
So we are right now at around 11.5-12% of total revenues this year. And next year, we see that number staying at around 12% of total revenues.
Understood. Thanks. I have more questions. I'll join back with you. Thanks.
Sure.
Thank you. Before we take our next question, we would like to remind participants to ask a question. You may press star and one. The next question is from the line of Saion Mukherjee from Nomura Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. So in one of the earlier, you mentioned R&D for specialty and innovation at 8%, right? So that's a significant, more than 50%, close to 60% of your spend is now going in innovation-related work?
Sorry, say that again, Shyam. So we are saying 8% for both specialty and innovation.
So, okay, and the rest is for generics, right? So,
correct.
For generics, only 40% of your R&D spend is for generics. Rest is for specialty and innovation.
Correct.
So, Glenn, the thing is, I understand from a long-term perspective you may see value here, but, there are a lot of uncertainties that one deals with, right?
So my
point is, how do you, assess that? Because these investments, what's the certainty? How do you want to monetize? Don't you think it's important to kind of have some, benchmark or guidelines to kind of work with here?
So, Shyam, the bulk of the investment is going in projects. So, 301, we spent a ton of money last year, okay? If you see FY17, right, we spent, on the phase three, we spent a lot of money. And now we've got a product which we are now filing in the next 2 months and we will monetize. So, that's the monetization, the visibility is very close since we've got passing phase threes and the rest. If you look at now where we are investing, most of that 8% is on the Xolair biosimilar because we are anticipating starting phase 3s, in we are currently just completing the phase 1s. We are starting phase 3s next year. We are also investing in GSP304, which is a nebulized product. So I think the certainty, these are not pure innovative products. So while we are saying 8%, I would say out of the 8%, as on today, the most of the investment is still going more behind the specialty products as compared to pure innovative products. On the pure innovative products, we are still at about 4.5% of sales or somewhere thereabouts.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And any visibility on licensing deal? You mentioned, you know, some deals can happen by end of this fiscal year. So what's the outlook on that?
So we have multiple ongoing discussions. We have discussions on GBR 830, you know, for partnering that out. We have discussions on some of the oncology drugs. You know, we've got some good data coming out of GBR 1302, and we did some we did a presentation on some of the biomarker data, which looks exciting. We also have discussions on some of the specialty products, including, as I mentioned, GSP301 and the Xolair biosimilar. I mean, these are some of the discussions that we're looking for partnerships on. So I think it's fair to say that I think over the next 12 to 15 months, you should see a lot of activity on the partnership side, right, on our portfolio.
So, Glenn, do you think that, you know, you have been having this discussion for some time, so you need to do more work before you can actually sign the deal? I mean, it looks like it's, you know, being pushed out somewhat.
I think right now we are not getting that sense. But you never know, Shyam. I mean, these things, doing a deal is pretty complex in terms of, you know, trying to match what we want out of the deal and what a partner wants. So I think those are some trade-offs that we are constantly making, right, and taking decisions on potential licensing deals.
Okay. And the last question on the U.S. Generics, I think you mentioned 13% erosion, right, in the core business. Now, that looks to be on the higher side. So are you basically factoring in a competition in Mupirocin, which is your largest product, to, you know, drive this? Because I don't think there is anything, you know, very high value in the portfolio other than Mupirocin.
So we are clearly taking at least one competitor into our analysis, right, coming through, I would say, over the next six odd months, right, into Mupirocin, and that's what's giving you the that level of price erosion.
Okay. And, you know, just Glenn, one thing, like, you know, last quarter you talked about potential U.S. revenue more than $125 million this quarter, which hasn't come through. So what went wrong here? Is it the Econdix VBAD consolidation or some new launches? I mean, what was missing, you know, compared to the expectation?
I mean, the operating environment is extremely tough, okay, Shyam, and it's getting harder to gain market share even on two-player markets and three-player markets. I mean, you're seeing competitors defending their market shares pretty aggressively, and that is bringing down the overall. And then at some point, you know, if you go after greater market share, the price is coming down, so you're ending up with taking the whole market down. So I think it's a very, very tough environment. As Bob mentioned, the U.S. environment continues to remain very challenging.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to our participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. We'll take the next question from the line of Abhishek Sharma from India Infoline. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just one question on the rest of the world. There's a significant jump this quarter. I was going through past few quarters. The last time we had this high number was in 4Q14. So any color on this? Is this currency? Is this any particular territory?
Well, our ROW markets continue to do well for us, right? Between Russia, CIS, Asia and Africa, right? All three geographies are doing well for us. I mean, our, you know, the reality, if you look at our business today, out of, I would say, you know, if you keep the U.S. aside, which is about 30-35% of total revenues in this quarter, right? Almost 65 to 70% of our total business, right, continues to grow at close to 15-odd%, right? And going forward, you know, if you look at FY19 also, right, you know, we expect this piece of the business to continue to grow in excess of 15% with improved margins coming consistently out of all geographies. So other than the U.S. business, you know, the 65-70% of total revenues continues to do well for us. And that's what, you know, will drive the growth, right, over the next 5 quarters. I mean, the U.S. business, as Bob mentioned, our visibility is that growth will really, you know, we will have a much better handle on growth post the launch of Ryaltris, right, GSP301. Until then, you know, there's significant amount of uncertainty in the U.S. business.
Yeah, yeah, but just on this rest of the world, I mean, is there any specific territory which is standing out?
So I think Russia is a big driver for us longer term and will continue to remain a big driver. I mean, we have several new product launches coming out of Russia, right? And we have 5 launches next year. So I think growth, particularly in the Russia CIS region, will continue to remain strong.
Okay. And just your gross debt and the net debt number for this quarter?
So the gross debt for this quarter was 4638 and the net debt was 3603.
All right. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. Next question is from the line of Aditya Khemka from DSP BlackRock. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys. Thanks for the opportunity. Glenn, you mentioned on the 2 products, Velcol tablet and Velcol suspension. Do we have a tag yet on the 2 products?
Yes, we do, Aditya. But I think, you know, we've had several tag dates in the past and, you know, there have been further questions. So I don't think, I'm not sure about what is the relevance, you know, of those tag dates. As on today, we have nothing outstanding in terms of questions, but it's hard to predict, you know, whether we will get approved on the TAD date or no.
Well, that's a fair point. But could you, if it allows you to, I mean, can you disclose which month the TAD date is in?
I don't think we can put that out of it.
Okay, that's fair. Also, on the same question, Glenn, on Voltaren gel, I think we have a filing. Do we have a TAD date yet on that?
On Voltaren also, we have a TAD date, Aditya.
We have a TAD date. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And there is nothing pending on Voltaren as well, as of now?
I'm not so sure, Aditya. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. That's fair enough. And lastly, Glenn, we did not get the approval on Epiduo on time. So what is it, in your opinion, that has delayed approval there, and by when should we expect the Epiduo approval?
So we got a CR which we are responding to, and, you know, we anticipate, you know, I would say, you know, in the early part of FY19, we should get approval on it.
Understood. Understood. And lastly, on the margin front, right? So I heard Mr. Mani said, say that the margins will probably normalize from here on. But if I would, and I know it's difficult given the operating environment in U.S., must be difficult for you guys to do any sort of forecasting. But if you were pushed to the wall to sort of venture a guess on your FY19 EBITDA margins, what would that be, Glenn? Because, you know, it's important for us to understand that to build our models. So just
so our all I can say, Aditya, is our margins from here. So this, for me, Q3 was the lowest quarter, okay, both in terms of sales and in terms of margins. And I think from here on, every quarter, right, you should see sales go up and margin improvement coming through. You know, in fact, I mean, even starting from Q4, right? So one is Q4, of course, as Mani mentioned, the gross margins will come back to where they were in Q2. And from there on, we should continue to see the margin improvement coming through in the business. So, I mean, that's the only visibility we can give. And as I said, for 65-70% of our business, right, we have clear visibility on, growing the business in excess of 15% in FY19. And we have margin improvement coming through, right, for 65-70% of our business. It's the 30-35% which is the U.S., right, where clearly we are struggling to provide any guidance or visibility because of the high level of uncertainty in the environment.
Fair enough. And Nupur, if you are taking one competitor, are you aware of a filing there? Are you aware of a filing?
We know of a filing, but we also know that it's for some reason the approval has consistently got delayed. But we still believe that, on the conservative side, you should see a competitor post 6 months from now.
Fair enough. And lastly, if I may ask, on this the India business growth, right? So we did 12% odd this quarter, and if you were to sort of, crystal gaze there, barring any changes in the regulatory front, what should be your growth rate on the India businesses in FY19 and 20?
Well, I think India will grow north of 15% very, very comfortably. And in India, the other advantage we have is we have two very unique product launches coming up, which are in-license products, patent-protected products, one in oncology and the other one in the diabetes space. Mm-hmm. And both these, the oncology product we anticipate will launch in the next 3 months. Mm-hmm. And in diabetes, we... towards the second half of FY19 is when we launched the product. So India looks very solid for us. At least for the next few years, we feel pretty comfortable growing this business at about in excess of 15%.
Sure. And my last question. I think previously, at some point in time, we had given a guidance of about 23%, 22% EBITDA in FY21, given the way you saw the business ramping up. So, at the current juncture, given the way U.S. market is behaving, you think that 22-23% EBITDA margin guidance for FY21 is still valid?
I think it is. So, we still maintain that we'll get there. For us, we think we've hit the bottom of the U.S. cycle. And from here on, we still have some uncertainty over the next about 5 quarters. But, if we get the new product approvals, right, mm-hmm. automatically you will see a constant recovery in the U.S. business, both in terms of top-line sales and in terms of margins. So I think that's the only uncertainty we are dealing with. Will we get the new product approvals on time, right? Mm-hmm. And that's been the biggest challenge, I would say, over the last 3 months, right? We've had a lot of uncertainty on when the product approvals will come through and what's the time frame, right? But if we see a constant stream of new product approvals, like we've seen in the past, we think even you'll see even a recovery in the U.S. Generics business. I mean, that's the way we look at it. The rest of the business, as I said, margins will continue to grow from here. Even the businesses like Latin America, where we've struggled historically, Brazil for us, this year is a cash break-even and margins are positive. And I think next year you should see, margins going to double digits coming out of even markets like Brazil, which we've historically struggled with, right? And Latin America as a region should look strong for us from next year onwards because of the product launches and the work we've done there. So it's been a long investment phase of over 10, 12 years. But I think now it's finally beginning to pay off, basically.
Sure. And Jason, if you may answer this one, please. So there is 8% of sales being spent on specialty and innovation. So if I add that to your EBITDA margins, you're roughly at 25% EBITDA margin for FIAT on the generic side. Would you also have a sense of the ROE on the generic side, leaving aside the specialty assets and liabilities?
Much higher than the overall company average.
I think one of the things we are thinking of doing going forward, Aditya, is I think from next quarter is we're trying to provide some color on the different segments of the business. Okay, that will give you a clear visibility, right? You know, keeping the specialty and innovation expenses aside, right? How the business will look like and what will be the ROEs and you know, on the business. So we're trying to give more visibility around some of that starting on the full year basis.
Okay, that will be great. And I hope those will be audited numbers. So
Absolutely. They will be audited numbers.
Yeah.
Okay. All the best, Glenn, and all the very best for future. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Harith Ahmed from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. My question is on the outstanding Form 483 for your Baddi facility. Given that you haven't received any approval from Baddi since the inspection, I would like to know if there has been any communication from the FDA or after your initial response.
So we've provided a very comprehensive response to the agency, and since then we haven't heard back from the agency. We did get a couple of, small CBE kind of approvals, but not new product approvals yet. Also, from a pending perspective, I don't think we have too many filings which are pending out of Baddi.
Okay. Would you like to share an expectation on the potential outcome of this inspection? Do you see an escalation into OAI or a warning letter?
Currently, we have no visibility on the outcome. So, as I said, we're waiting to hear from the agency.
Okay. And on GBR 830, previously you had talked about a high level of interest from partners for licensing this asset. Now you also announced the commencement of a phase 2B study. So is it because of this phase 2B study that you've decided to put the discussions on hold, or you know, how should we look at the licensing potential for this asset?
I think the two are completely, they are exclusive, right? We will continue partnering discussions, but we're not going to hold back the development of this asset. So from that perspective, the phase 2B, you know, we are on course to starting the phase 2B for atopic dermatitis. And in parallel, we have licensing discussions ongoing.
Okay. And lastly, on GSP301, based on any market research studies that you may have done, is there any peak sales estimate that you would like to guide for this asset?
We think peak sales will be in the range of 80 to 100 million in revenues.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Shyam Srinivasan from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. My first question is on the cost rationalization, cost pruning that we outlined, I think, last quarter, maybe the quarter before. So can you just give us a quick update? And a related question, just looking at your other expenses other than R&D, it's about 350-odd crores. I think we had 300 crores last, 290 crores last quarter. So just trying to get the right base in terms of how one should think about this cost line.
So I'll just give an opening comment and then Mani will respond. But I think, so on the cost, it's a cost control has been a big priority for us. And we continue to focus on it. We currently have close to three different consulting firms working at different levels on helping us in terms of cost control. We've yet to see the benefits out of that in the current financial performance, but I think going forward, you will see the benefit. Although our expenses are lower currently, right, compared to where we were last year, mm-hmm. I still think there is a significant flow-through benefit that we should see over the next, I would say, 12 to 13 months from these different initiatives that we've got ongoing. So I think On the cost side, you know, the current business, we continue to try and improve our overall margins, right, by controlling costs.
Yeah. Sham, and just to add to what Glenn said, like if you look at it, we have been, while we have appointed various consulting firms to help us, but at the same time, as a firm, we have also been very, you know, very cost conscious in the last couple of quarters. And you can also see that compared to the, you know, previous quarter, which was about last year, same time, was about almost 770 crores. And this year it's about 633, and that includes a small percentage of exchange loss. So more or less, if you really look at it on a broad basis, we are pretty much lesser than what we were last year. And compared to the last quarter, it's just a marginal increase. I think going forward, you will see us, you know, depending on the cycles and how we invest in the marketing campaigns, there'll be 30, 40 crore maybe difference, but not too much.
If you can just help us, just maybe the broad buckets where you think there is scope, just illustration-wise, any line items you would like to highlight?
So I think SG&A is one line item we are looking at very closely.
Mm-hmm.
The other is certain operating costs, right, which will further improve the GC. And the third we are looking at is more in terms of helping us on the supply chain side, right?
Okay. Okay, my second question is on the European business. This Salmex, the product, do we now have approval in any European country? I think that was what I highlighted earlier.
So we have got approval in the Nordics, in the Nordic countries, and in one of the Nordic countries, we've already got substitution status, which is a big, big thing, right? And as of now, we are the only company that we are aware of that has substitution on an MDI, I'm sorry, on a DPI, a multi-dose DPI, right, across Europe. So I think it's a big thing that we've got substitution in one market, Denmark, and we're still waiting for the rest. And I think this year, the next 12 months can be really exciting for Salmex as and when the rest of the approvals come through, particularly the major markets like Germany and some of the others we're waiting on. And if we do get substitution, that could be a huge thing. It's still a very big product in Europe.
Okay, so do you think, Glenn, any crystal ball on how large this opportunity could be for us in Europe? If you assume substitution comes through in at least half the states, let's assume. I'm just giving a
scenario. I mean, look, it's a $700-800 million market in Europe. So, and you know, being first generic and having substitution could be really substantial. I mean, it's hard to put a number out there because we still don't have visibility around how some of the other bigger markets also would look at substitution. But I think, you know, it could be substantial for us.
Got it. So you think the Nordic experience could be used as a read across for some of the other guys, perhaps?
We definitely think, you know, it will, you know, the two major markets which we are unsure about is obviously the UK market and you know, one or two of the larger European markets, but I think pan-Nordic countries, countries in Eastern Europe, some of these, right, substitution seems to be possible.
Okay. Okay. My last question, just a technical one on the tax loss changes in the U.S. Has it impacted you on your tax line? We have seen the other Indian guys take some charges there.
Yeah. So just to give you a color on that, so based on the U.S. tax reforms bill, basically, the federal taxes have reduced from 35 to 21. So we have reassessed our U.S. deferred tax assets and liabilities, and we have a one-off of 5.2 crores here.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to our participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one. Next question is from the line of Alok Dalal from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys. Glenn, one question on U.S. Is low vertical integration the reason that you are feeling more pressure in the U.S. than peers?
I think, so, I mean, we have a big derm franchise, right? Obviously, you know, some of the pressures are coming from the derm, but also some of the other products we are facing pressures. But I think also regarding your question on vertical integration, we are now looking much more closely and backward integrating into some of our products. I can't give you visibility on which ones, but that's something we are increasingly looking at doing going forward.
Okay. So Glenn, if next 12 months pricing scenario does not improve, is it fair to think that companies with a weaker cost structure would be weeded out first and then things start to consolidate?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think very clearly you're already seeing some effects of some of the big boys who are struggling, right? You know, running into market shortages and supply, facing supply issues, and some of those businesses are available to pick up, right? Although they are not tangible yet, but I think increasingly you will see, you know, some of the companies that don't have the best cost structure or are struggling with the supply chain, right? You know, those businesses will be up for grabs.
Sure.
Okay, Glenn, this is Bob. And another point, I mean, on a product level, we're starting to see some discontinuations from different manufacturers as well.
Okay. But, Bob, we've seen a very fast approval cycle. So there are companies who are also sitting with approvals and not launch those products. So do you believe that if somebody vacates the market, then the other guy who is sitting on an approval not launch can come and fill the market and therefore prices may not improve?
It's hard to predict, but I think that overall we're seeing, you know, we're seeing more product discontinuations than we have in the past, and I don't know that we'll see, you know, an accelerated entry with, you know, each person that exits because of the situation right now.
Okay. And second question is regarding balance sheet. Again, net debt has increased 100 crore QOQ. So, guys, what is the challenge in bringing down the debt level?
So, Alok, this is Mani here. So, yeah. As such, if you look at it, QOQ, actually our debt has just gone up by about 105 crores, okay? So, in spite of a challenging kind of quarter with cost structure, but in spite of that, we had an operating cash flow of about 240 crores. And the addition to the assets was about 237. But there was this thing of dividend. Of course, you don't pay dividend every quarter, but the dividend was about 70 crores, okay? And so, we feel that going forward in the next quarter, with a better, you know, as we explained that our cost structure should also be much better in the next quarter. And also with some amount of refunds coming from the GST, etc., working capital benefits, we should definitely see it. And as such, we are already lower than last year. We should be seeing it a little lower than where we are having it as of today.
Yeah, so Mani sir, I think the guidance was to reduce debt by 300 crore year over year. Is that guidance still holding up?
See, it will be, depending on how the quarter pans out, I mean, it will be somewhere much
close
lower than,
that.
Close to that.
Close, I mean, it will be, you know, it will definitely be below March of last year, and, you know, it will be close to that.
Okay, and same holds for next year as well, right, Glenn, you had mentioned in previous calls.
Absolutely. I mean, our goal, as I said, is to try and get to 300 crores virtually every year from year on. Okay. Right?
Yeah.
Of cost reduction.
No, that is correct. But Glenn, somehow last couple of years, that has not happened. So the question that again I asked is about where you get why is that not happening is something that is difficult to comprehend.
It's very simple, Alok, because our R&D expenditure is very, very high. Okay. I mean, we are investing, you know, 12-13% of revenues on research, okay? And if you add back, as we said, if you just add back 8%, okay, that we are spending on specialty innovation, right? And you take that capital and you add that back, right? You will easily see, you know 600-700 crores of on a full year basis of cash getting generated, which is going into specialty and innovation. That's the reality. The rest of the business, our margins are very, very, I mean, it's a very profitable business overall, right? And even next year, you know, we anticipate at the EBITDA level, you know, prior to any R&D spend, you're looking at, you know, 33-34% kind of EBITDA. The challenge is the capital that we are putting in R&D. So we're investing for the long term to make sure that we have a pipeline and we have some big wins and abnormal growth, right? I mean, that's the way we are looking at the business.
Sure.
Right? So,
yeah,
I mean, all the other competitors, if you see, right, I mean, they are spending, you know, 3%, 5%, 7% on research. Our research spends, right, are 12 odd percent, right, right now. So the delta of, if you just add back that 6% or 8% delta, right, that will give you your answer as to where the cash is going.
Yes, sure.
And
okay.
And that's a conscious decision, right, that we've made that we want to move up the value chain into being a specialty innovative company, and that's why we're putting that capital there.
Yes, okay, yeah. Okay, thank you, Glenn. Thanks for taking my questions.
Thank you. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal from IDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Glenn, on, you know, on the margin improvement that you talked about, I mean, which are the geographies or regions where which hold probably, you know, which probably have the main, probably will have going forward the maximum influence on the margin trajectory in terms of wherever changes that you're seeing in those businesses?
So, Nitin, I think it's very broad-based, okay? I mean, right from India, we are expecting margin improvement. I mean, India, as Jason mentioned, right, on the call, I mean, we've invested in an OTC business over the last 3-4 years. I mean, next year we anticipate, you know, sales of, you know, just 3 or 4 brands contributing close to 200 crores of sales, right, coming out of the OTC business, you know. And as you know, the initial phase of investment in OTC is very high, right? And now we are seeing the margins, you know, we are seeing positive margins and the overall business margins are, so right from India business where you're seeing margin improvement, we are seeing margin improvement in the Russia CIS region. Latin America, which, as I said, was a, you know, particularly Brazil, right, was a bleed for us, right? I mean, this is the first year we are actually, this year, FY18, right, we are actually making some positive, we are cash break even and we are making positive margins in Brazil. And next year, LATAM as a region will go to, you know, 10 to 15% at the EBITDA level, you know, which has never been the case historically at the margin level. So I think you're seeing delta coming through across. Europe is another big driver, right? I mean, Europe growth is strong. And if assuming we launch Salmex and we have a full year of Salmex next year, Europe should look really positive for us. So it's been a long investment cycle across the different geographies, and now we're seeing the benefits of the investments we've made and the margin profile improving consistently.
Okay, and secondly, you know, on this cost rationalization that we talked about, I mean, based upon whatever work you would have done with the consultants, is there a broader number of potential synergies that we can target, which we have? Because, I mean, clearly, I mean, that can probably get realized over a period of time, even if they'll take their own time to come through.
Sorry, say that again.
I mean, in terms of the cost synergies that can get realized on the cost, on the rationalization bit, or on the various cost rationalization initiatives that you guys are working on, is there a broader number that on the synergies that we
get? Yeah, I mean, I think we should get cost down. Our guess is around 1 to 2%, right? Overall improvement should come through, right, on the cost side.
And what time period do you see that happening?
And by the time it actually materializes, it's going to take some time, right? So clearly it's not a, I would say, part of FY19, more of FY20 event.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Pavitra S. from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Most of my questions have been answered, but one from my side. So you know, looking at you know, the pressures that you're facing in the U.S. business, you know, it seems like your quarterly EBITDA run rate would be somewhere around, you know, 300 or 400 crores or so. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, against that, are you comfortable holding you know, a gross debt of around 4,600 crores, or you know, do you think you have to cut down some of your CapEx or some of your investments in R&D you know, get leverage to more comfortable levels, or are you okay to, you know, hold a slightly higher leveraged balance sheet in the interim?
So I think, look, as I said, you know, if we are able to generate that 300 crores of free cash every year, we are okay. Clearly a lot of the business is tailored around making sure the business now generates free cash, right? I mean, that's a big priority for us to keep generating free cash on a consistent basis despite the higher R&D spend that we're making, right? If we can achieve that, right, make sure the cash, the business is generating free cash and we invest in R&D to ensure our future and make sure we grow consistently and control cost. If we achieve these three things, I think we are in a good place.
Sure. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was our last question. I would now like to hand the conference back to Mr. Jason D'Souza for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Thanks. Thank you, Inba. Just to close the call with a disclaimer, this call has been organized by Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited. The information, statements, and analysis made during this call describing the company's objectives, projections, and estimates are forward-looking statements and progressive within the meaning of applicable security laws and regulations. The analysis contained herein is based on business assumption. Actual results may vary from those expressed or implied depending upon economic conditions, government policies, and other incidental factors. No representation of warranty either expressed or implied is provided in relation to this judgment. This presentation should not be regarded by recipients as a substitute for the exercise of their own judgment. With this, we end Glenmark's Q3 earnings call. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, members of the management. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.